my ideas for my music, they probably come from just life experiences, all kind of stuff. Movies I watch, other music I listen to, everything.
Welcome to the Idea Generation Podcast, a show about creative entrepreneurship. My name is Noah Callahan Bever, and each week I talk to some of the most innovative ideators in culture and try to figure out how they make their creative decisions. This week, I'm talking to artist and entrepreneur Freddie Gibbs, who went from underground obscurity to getting signed to getting dropped to ultimately building out a robust catalog of classic albums, collectible merch, and even a Grammy nom. This podcast is brought to you by the good people at Shopify. Feeling that entrepreneurial itch? Turn your passion into a business with Shopify. They've got everything you need to start, run, or grow your business. Check out shopify.com/idea to learn more. In 2004, a young man from Gary, Indiana, had an idea. A 20-something with no clear direction, Freddie Gibbs had been drifting between college, the United States Army, and the streets when he discovered an outsized talent for rapping. Though he was skeptical of the music industry, he invested in rapping and cultivated his skill, ultimately creating a catalyst that would change his life.
My mom was a postal worker for 30 years. My dad was early in my life, like up until I was probably like 7 to 8. My dad was a police officer. And after that, he was like probably like in between jobs like his whole life after that. You know, my dad was, like I said, he never really kept a solid job like that. He was always in between jobs. He'll like do something for a year or two and quit, you know, because that was just, you know, maybe it wasn't his calling. His calling was probably music because he's a singer, really. And, you know, so I think that his talent inspired me as far as the, I don't really know what kind of professional, you know, frame I could put him in. Because like I said, he didn't really like keep, you know, jobs very long. You know, I know my mom worked hard every day.
Did he perform or record or anything?
Yeah, definitely. He performed a lot. He actually is a traveling member of Shy Lights.
Oh, really?
Yeah, definitely.
Crazy. Okay. We all sort of look up to our parents in certain ways. You know, what was that feeling of watching him try to achieve something and not be able to get to it?
Probably just, you know, rejection, just seeing him be, you know, disappointed, you know, that was quite difficult, you know. But I definitely didn't want to fuck with a career in music. You know, after seeing, you know, after looking at his struggle with that shit all those years. So, you know, I don't know, man. I think God chose this for me. I really didn't at all. Because, you know, growing up as a kid, I definitely didn't want to be a fucking rapper. Not at all.
What did you want to be?
Maybe an athlete. Maybe a lawyer, you know? Something that I always knew I was going to be something that wasn't regular, something that gave me a little bit more power than the next person. I always knew I was going to be that, but I didn't know what it was. And, you know, this rap shit just kind of like found me, I think, you know. I always loved music. So I think that just being a student of that, you know, kind of helped me to hone my skills as being an actual rapper, I guess, you know, studying what was good, just knowing, having an ear for it. You know, I think that probably comes first.
After high school, you went to college to play ball, football.
Yeah.
Were you thinking that was going to be a professional step, or were you just using that to get into school to see what happened?
I definitely thought that was the end all to be all, you know, school, fuck school. I definitely wasn't thinking about being in school or anybody's classroom. You know, my notion was shit. I was just in the classroom since I was 6 years old. Why the fuck do I gotta go to class? So, you know, but I didn't work as hard as I should have at football either. So, you know.
How come?
Being young, being stupid, being in the streets, chasing girls, all kind of shit like that. Like being 18, you know, just not having full direction as of yet, and just bad influences.
After playing ball, you ended up enlisting in the Army.
Yeah, not on purpose.
Not on purpose. Okay, what happened?
Not by choice. I mean, it was I had a charge that I was about to face, and my mother, I had this recruiter come to the court, and they gave me this shit called pretrial diversion or something like that, where I enlisted and charges kind of went away.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, you know, kind of a thing in the, you know, Black community, less fortunate community, you know what I'm saying? Hispanics, Blacks, people of that nature, kind of. A lot of people go into the military that way. Mm-hmm.
Did you at any point buy into trying to make that a career, or did you really just look at it as it was just a solution to this problem?
Solution to the fucking problem. Finish training in AIT and shit, get kicked out some kind of way. No fucking way. That was a nightmare.
Did you learn anything from that?
A whole lot. A whole lot. A whole lot of good came out of that, you know. Definitely taught me how to be more disciplined, more... just a lot of things, you know, as a man that I, you know, didn't get at home. I got in that basic training shit for sure. And that it definitely helped me, but I hated it. Hated every step of it. But I think a lot of kids should go through that. It should be some kind of like 6-month program for, you know, kids to do that shit, you know what I mean? Because it definitely gave me a different kind of mentality, you know?
Were you considering music or thinking about music at that point in your life?
No, not really. It was just like a play thing, you know? It wasn't until after I got kind of like out of the military that I was like, all right, I think this could, you know? Because my homies was rapping and stuff. And they was going to the studio and stuff like that. And I was just hanging around. So, you know, I was like, all right, maybe I could like do something within the music shit, I don't know, be a DJ, a manager, something like that. Some type of executive, maybe, you know, Suge Knight type shit, you know what I'm saying? But shit, one day I just ended up rapping, man, and I never stopped.
What was that moment?
It was these niggas doing a session, and they was just trash as fuck, man. And I was like, man, if motherfuckers spending their money to do this, and shit, man, I could do this. This is easy. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know, just like the competitor in me kind of like drove me to do it, I think. So I think that's what kind of made me do it. And one of my best friends, Rod, he was doing that shit. And I was like, hold on, man, you a fucking barber. Like, what the fuck? You got a CD, you know what I mean? So this motherfucker had like CDs with like barcodes and shit and covers and stuff like that. And I was kept asking him about like, he piqued my interest in the business of this. I was like, how the fuck are you making this? You know, and he was just telling me how he was spending his money on it and how he, you know, I was like, damn, okay. And I just looked at it like, I don't know, like drugs. You know, you can make 100 CDs and sell them and flip them. And, you know, I looked at it as like a hustle, you know what I mean? You know, and shit, I was talking about like shit that was, you know, really going on and I was really going through. So, you know. And, you know, those motherfuckers that was, like, beefing with me and shit like that. Like, I had, like, enemies and shit like that. And they was, like, shooting at me and shit. And, like, putting that shit on, like, tapes, you know? Like, rapping about that shit. And I was like, damn. So I was like, fuck that. I'm shoot at them and rap about it, too. So, you know, so I see a lot of, you know, like, a lot of that, like, beef-based, killing-type-based, like, shit. You know, music coming, like, especially like coming out of like Chicago and shit like that. Like, you know, I understand it because, you know, 10 years before that, you know, I wasn't doing it in the same format as them, but it was pretty much the same thing. You know, it just wasn't as much internet, but, you know, a lot of that music come from like, you know, like real street beats and real problems and things of that nature. And that's just how it started.
With 1 foot still in the street, Gibbs started dropping mixtapes locally. He eventually caught the attention of Interscope Records intern Ben Lambo Lambert, who championed his talent and helped him get signed to the label. Gibbs devoted the next few years to recording what was supposed to be his major label debut. However, by the time he turned the project in, the label had lost interest. In 2006, Interscope dropped Freddie Gibbs. Quite understandably, he thought about quitting rap.
It sounds like at that point you were at least had one foot in the street. Living that life exposes yourself to certain hazards, both physically with law enforcement and also the mental stress associated with it. Did you at that moment think of that as a long-term play, or was that something that you knew that you were engaging with for a moment and trying to figure out how to get on to the next thing?
I was good at rap like as soon as I started.
Okay.
You know, thank God. So it wasn't like, it was like, you know, the shit I could do was amazing off top. Maybe not to me, you know what I mean, but to other people. You know, Lambo found me, you know, when I was, you know, in Gary. So, you know, obviously he saw something. But, and I knew, you know, that I was, you know, definitely better than everybody around me. So I was just like, all right, I'm going to really take it serious, you know, because if they like him, oh, yeah, they love me. I'm way better than him. You know, and I was knocking niggas' socks off, you know, around my area, you know, with the rap shit. So it was easy. Once I figured it, I was like, all right, like once I got like 10 people to like me, then 100 people like me, then 500 people like me.
How did you get the first 10 to like you?
Being in the streets with the CDs, you know, during that time, you know, this 2004, when I was like 2003, 2004, when I started like really rapping, just being in the streets, you know, being known, you know, in your city pretty much, and taking it from there.
And how did you make enough noise in Gary to end up on Lambo's?
I didn't make enough noise in Gary at that point. Yeah. It was just like I said, it was just a local thing. And Lambo just found the shit because he's just an internet geek. He just be thugging through the trenches even during that time. And he got one of the best ears in the game. So, you know, he dug out a diamond in the rough and the rest is history. And once he got me over there at Interscope, I just saw rap from a different playing field. I wasn't like rapping with, you know, these local guys anymore. I wasn't competing with them. I was, you know, at that point, all right, I'm competing against, you know, the world. It's like he took me out of high school and put me straight in the pros. And I had to like, you know, find my way from there, even when, you know, doors were starting to shut, you know.
What did you think when you got that first call from him?
Oh, I hung up on him. I was like, yeah, right, nigga. It wasn't even from him. It was from the intern. He called me and shit and was like, yeah, we want to blah, blah, blah. And I was like, whatever, nigga, send 2 tickets. And then they flew me and my homie to New York. And then they put me on the bench for like, I don't know, probably like 6 months. Until they like worked out, worked out a deal for me, and then out of that, I came to California.
Did you even like have a lawyer or any of that kind of stuff at that point?
I had none of that shit. They gave me a lawyer, they gave me a manager, all of that shit. You know, I was just like, okay, I was fresh in the game. You know, I figured if I would have like came with all of that type of shit and added pressure, then they wouldn't have fucked with me. You know, they looked at it like, look, man, we think you can rap, but like, you know, your music ain't that good, and it wasn't at that time. They was like, but we can make you. Put you in the studio and put you with real producers and you could like make real music. And I was like, all right. So, you know, I took that leap and that opportunity, and it was a great one because I learned a lot. It was just, bad people in my situation, in that situation.
So what happened at Interscope that you ended up getting dropped and the being shelved?
Nothing happened. I wasn't ready yet. You know, as an artist, and they weren't ready yet for me as a company, you know, and, you know, we didn't have a plan, a marketing plan, you know, and that's really the nuts and bolts of it. So we just had just a bunch of music, you know what I mean? And a guy from Gary, you know, that they didn't really know what to do with. So it was just like, all right, well, sayonara, you know what I mean? Good luck, kid.
That was the time when you still sort of needed radio and you needed hits in order to get
it. There was a lot of factors involved, you know, that when it came to like making a popular rapper at that time, you know, it wasn't just Yeah, hits. Yeah, you definitely needed that. You definitely needed radio. I ain't had neither of that. You needed like affiliation, you know, with the maybe a bigger artist. I ain't had none of that. So, you know, it was just like, you know, I was just a lone wolf. So it was just like, yo, I got to figure something out. So it's like, at that time, you know, the labels were transitioning and just being really just banks and distributors, to be honest. That whole A&R and thing and that development of an artist, that was out of the window when I got there. So I learned that at that stage, that's when all of that shit stopped. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, so what I did was, you know, I got dropped Lambo, didn't get a job. So we just created our own brand pretty much, you know what I mean? And just ran with it.
Were they putting pressure on you as an artist to sort of beat anything or to try to achieve anything?
Nah, they was like, they kind of just gave me some beats and was like, go ahead and record. They didn't really give a fuck. It wasn't like no like backlash or no like me calling. It wasn't no like, I want to get that out of people's head. It wasn't like me calling the label, tripping or them telling me to do shit. Nah, it was just like nothing. They probably forgot I was signed there, dog, to be honest. So it wasn't, nah, it wasn't no shit like that. It was just like, all right, like, oh yeah. It was just like a tax write-off situation. Yeah. It gave me opportunity to learn some shit, you know? And I learned it, you know. That was probably, to me, I equate that to like me finishing college, you know. I got my degree in the music industry.
Was there ever a moment after getting dropped that you considered just giving it up?
Yeah, hell yeah, definitely. Because, you know, I didn't really know who was going to want to fuck with me after that. You know, at that time, when you get dropped from a record label, you kind of like damaged goods. Even now, sometimes when you get dropped from a major label, it's, you know, they kind of look at you as like damaged goods. So it's like, you know, I was just wondering, I was just, you know, at a point I was like, yeah, I don't think nobody else is going to like sign me. You know, man, that was depressing. But then I was just like, all right, well, I'm just going to do it myself. You know, and I'm like, if I got to put my own money up to do it and continue doing that, then I'm gonna do that. And I ain't asked nobody for anything. I ain't accept nothing from nobody. I just literally, you know, pressed the gas and was like, all right, I'm gonna do this shit with whatever I gotta do.
Gibbs had made it out of the streets unscathed, but by 2012, he found himself mired in music industry drama. He signed with Young Jeezy's CTE label, but that too turned out to be a road to nowhere. However, Gibbs persevered and got himself off the label and took a swing independently.
At that point now, having done the major label thing, tried to find that affiliation, what was your strategy to take things forward?
I was just, you know, I got to keep doing me, you know, I got to keep I got to focus on myself instead of, you know, trying to, you know, make somebody else thing grow. I was like, let me just, you know, focus on me, step back and exploit my strengths and really go from there.
You know, you sort of have really carved your own lane in terms of how you approach both doing solo projects and then these collaborative albums. When you started to work independently, did you have a vision for all of that or did you build it as you go?
Yeah, I mean, you know, shit, I'm my own favorite rapper, so I know what I want to hear, you know, so it's like, shit, I built Freddie Gibbs. So I was like, all right, you know, I can build it to be what I want it to be. You know, and, you know, with that said, I was just, you know, I just, like I said, the competitor in me wanted me to be, you know, one of the best rappers. So I just was like, all right, I'm going to, you know, build this story, you know what I mean, and shape it the way I want to. Just making the music that I want to make without the pressure of trying to, like, be on the radio, trying to be on Billboard. Like, you know, I really, once I started, like, making money, it was just like, shit, I don't really give a fuck about, you know, being the most popular motherfucker no more. You know, I cared about that when I was trying to get a record deal. you know, maybe the like first like year or two after I got dropped from our initial record deal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like once my music started turning a profit and like people start coming to the shows and stuff like that, I stopped giving a fuck about that.
At the beginning of this, the independent part of your career, like how hand to mouth were things and how low were the funds?
Oh, shit was fucked up, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, sleeping on homies' couches, stuff like that. You know what I mean? You gotta definitely gotta scrape and survive. When you know, rap is an expensive thing to do. You know, you can't name me a lot of shit. Name me like five rappers that like took the same path that I took. You know, a lot of these motherfuckers gotta get, you know, they got some like big homie with them, funding them, things of that nature. You know, I was the big homie and the talent at the same time. So, you know, if a motherfucker come to me telling me they want to start a rap career, I'm be like, hey, man, go get like $100,000, man, just to start, you know, because, you know, this shit costs. And then you have to spend a lot of money to make a lot.
It was a time there was very little in terms of precedent or blueprint for people doing that in hip hop and achieving any, you know, real significant level of success.
Right.
Was there anyone that you were looking at for inspiration, sort of how you built the paradigm?
I mean, I have to use the name again, but, you know, Master P definitely kind of like set the tone for things of that nature. Guys like 3-6 Mafia, you know, an array of, you know, independent artists that, you know, came up, you know, the E-40. You know, the whole Bay Area hustle was something that I definitely looked at when I moved to California. I was up there a lot anyway. So, like, seeing those guys, like, hustle and, like, put their records out and stuff like that and make a lot of money off of it, and seeing that you didn't have to be... The Bay kind of showed me that you didn't have to be on a major label to be a rich rapper. Because that's when I moved out here, I was, like, seeing, like, rich ass rappers that I had never heard of. And I was like, damn, you know what I'm saying? Shit, I want to be one of them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't really give a fuck if you heard of me or not. You know what I'm saying? Like, how do I get rich off of just rapping?
How did the setbacks and like the challenges that you're going through affect your art?
It put a lot of pain into it, I say. You know, not having, you know, huge budgets to do things, you know, I wasn't able to express a lot of things I wanted to do, you know, with a lot of projects back in those times. But as I grew, I was able to do more. It was more visuals, you know, better art. You know, I feel like me and Lambo, as time went on, we started to become more refined and things starting to tighten up a little more. We pretty much cut the fat and, yeah, that's pretty much it, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't really too many other, like, setbacks artistically. I think that everything that, you know, I was going through personally kind of, like, bled into the music. You know what I mean? The only setbacks would be just, like, logistic-type things. You know what I'm saying?
What do you mean, logistic?
I don't know, shit. We might get in a fight and I might miss the next show or something like that. You know, anything, you know what I mean? But, you know, like I said, all that comes with growth and just, you know, just not having the wrong people around you and, you know.
What was the project that you put out that you felt like, okay, I've reached a sort of stability. This is working and I think it can keep working.
Pinata, definitely. You know, after I made that, it was like, okay, yeah, I'm a rapper. You know what I mean? Like these, you know, checks and stuff is starting to come in. Like people starting to like notice. People starting to know who I am for real now. So, when I made that, I think that's when I was like, all right, I'm a rapper. You know, I could live like a rapper, you know.
When you put that out, you sort of put it out in stages with several EPs. What was the strategy behind that?
I have no fucking clue. I just made the music and like Egon and Madlib and Lambo And they was just, you know, dropping little shit here and there, teasing. They set it up correctly. So, you know, kudos to those guys. You know, I did my job and they did theirs and they did it, you know, they did a damn good job of it.
You know, in retrospect, it seems like such a no-brainer. You're a great rapper. Madlib is a great producer. Why do you think prior to that, the sort of collaborative album trend had, you know, there were other people that had done things here and there, but it didn't really seem to catch fire until after that.
Well, I'm a trendsetter, man. I think I do a lot of shit that this industry don't give me credit for. You know what I'm saying? So I think that that was one thing that I was probably in a weird space musically at that time. And I was just like, I wanted to, you know, get a lot of these bars off, man. You know what I'm saying? But I don't know, like being around, because I was making that when I was, you know, hanging around Jeezy. And it wasn't necessarily the type of music that they was making over there. So it's like, you know, when I was there, I had to make, you know, music with those guys during the day. And then I sneak off and then I go, you know, make Pinata shit. You know, Madlib, and then I bring it to them. They'd be like, "What the fuck is this?" They didn't really get it. So, you know, I had to like make people understand what I was trying to do with that. And, you know, really, it was just trying to just like show everybody that I could rap. It's only one Freddie Gibbs, so it's like, shit. Why am I gonna try to like make Freddie Gibbs sound like all the rest of these motherfuckers? It's like, man, I gotta make this shit as unique as possible. You know, or ain't nobody want to come, want to fuck with me. You know what I'm saying? Like, shit, I could, you know, sit and, you know, do everything everybody else is doing, but it's like, what's the point?
By the time he released Pinata in 2014, Gibbs was finally in control of his career. In Madlib, he had found a collaborator who brought out his best, and in Lambo, he had found more than a manager. He found a true business partner.
What is it that Madlib pulls out of you that makes it so special, that collaboration?
I think Madlib shit is like, it's weird. So, you know, it takes me out of my zone, you know what I mean? But shit got soul too at the same time. So it's just like, it just, I don't know. I can't really describe it until you like rap on like one of his beats. Like how it like make you feel, you know what I mean? Like it's a different kind of thing, you know what I mean? Like, and it might be some shit, he just might like some bongos or some goddamn African drums playing or some shit like that. I don't know. It's just it's an energy thing, man. You know what I mean? Like me and him got a real connection. So when I'm in a room making music with him, I don't know. I feel different. It's damn near like I got superpowers or some shit like that. So he kind of unlocks something that maybe I couldn't unlock, you know, without him. Him and Alchemist, you know what I mean? So, and this made me a better rapper when I go work with other producers. You know, shit, last week when I was in with Pharrell, you know, he was giving me a lot of direction, making me change things, you know, coaching me up, you know what I mean? And, you know, you need that, you know, especially from a legend, you know what I mean? You know, you go in with an arrogant attitude, like you know it all, and you know, you kind of fucking up. So he definitely, gave me a lot of good advice and worked the fuck out of me when I was in the studio with him. And I appreciate that.
Do you approach your solo works differently from the collaborative albums, like in terms of your process?
Nah, to me, it's all shit. I'm the only one rapping. You know what I mean? It ain't like I'm rapping in a fucking group. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, like I look at it like, you know, it's just a different template to work on. You know what I mean? I'm working on this Madlib template or this Alchemist template or just working on Diane or Seven Thomas or Pharrell, you know what I mean? I just look at it just like different options. I still, at the end of the day, got to be the best A1 rapper that I can be, you know what I mean? So nah, like if I was like in a, like a rap group, then I'd be like, oh yeah, we're approaching this different. Like, yeah, he going to do this. And then, nah, fuck that. I got to do everything anyway. You know what I mean? When it comes to the rapping. So it's just like, I just approach everything like it's game night or fight night or some shit. It's like a competition when I go in that booth, it's like, you know, and I don't have none, you know, my only competition is myself. So, you know, this is basically just, you know, trying to out-rap myself every time.
You know, were signed to a major label. It went sideways and ended poorly. You then were under another rapper that ended poorly. Then you had a string of real success, independent.
Yeah.
But then you ended up signing to not only one, but two major labels in the last few years. Did you have any sort of trepidation about that?
Not at fucking all, because I do it the way I want to do it. So I just look at it like, hey, it's just nothing personal, just business at this point. You know what I mean? I remember, shit, 5-6 years ago, with no fucking major label was signing me. Now everyone knocked down my fucking door, so.
What's the difference between the deal that you signed in 2006 versus the deals that you're now signing in 2017, 2018?
Oh, totally fucking different. You know what I mean? They got, like, it's like I told you before, it's about the leverage now. You know, I'm a viable, sellable product at this point. You know, I wasn't that in 2006, so I wasn't ready. So, you know, to be honest, I probably shouldn't have had a record deal at that point. I wasn't ready yet, you know, but, you know, by the grace of God, I got ready. Now I stay ready.
So what would be the draw for you to do a deal like that?
Relationships. Everything in this game with me is about relationships. When I do some shit like that, it's, I know somebody, you're cool, we got a good, you know what I mean, stature, even at Warner, you know what I mean? Like, I got people that I work with that's there, so, you know, it work out, you know what I mean? You know, and once the relationship goes sour, the business goes sour. So, you know, I just try to do business with people that I got real tight, good relationships with from now on. You know, I learned that in the RCA situation, you know what I mean? I did that based off a relationship with a guy that was kind of like shaky, you know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't fuck with him no more. You know what I'm saying? If I was a young artist, I wouldn't fuck with him either. But, you know, now I'm, you know, in business with some folks that I, you know, really got some real trust in, you know what I mean?
I was gonna say, you've now been in the trifecta, right? You've been signed to Universal, Sony, and Warner.
That's crazy. I didn't even think about that. Wow.
Are there any differences between the major labels in your opinion?
No. All that shit is the same. If you're not, like I said, if you're not a sellable product, they don't give a fuck about you anyway. So you got to become that for yourself. And then, you know, you do business with these people. Like I said, it's all well and good to do business with these, you know, organizations. But we, you know, as Black people, we definitely got to change the way we do business with these people. So, you know, and, you know, that's my outlook on it. You know, I don't think that, you know, I don't got to get in all the way in. I don't got to marry the label. You know what I mean? I think that we can, you know, both do things to mutually, you know, reach our goals, and then we can part ways or we can keep doing business. You know what I mean? I think that that's how shit works. You got to approach it like that. You got to look at yourself as important as the fucking label. Like, okay, fuck. Okay, record label's cool. That's great. But what the fuck are they going to put out if it ain't a fucking artist to put out? If every artist just say, fuck it, we're not going to do that no more, what are they going to do? So you're just as valuable. So you just got to know your value and, you know, take it step by step.
So what are your goals when you look at this next record that's coming out through Warner? What is your expectation, both what you're going to deliver and what they're going to do to help amplify that?
Shit, I'm not going to change shit that I do, you know? So win, lose, or draw, sink, or swim, you know, I'm going to do the same fucking shit that I've been doing for the past 10 years. So if they want to put extras on it, you know, it's bottles coming to the table. If they want to bring the holes and the sparklers and all that shit, then that's great. The bottles coming to the table anyway, so.
During that period, you've grown your merch business from being almost non-existent to quite robust in the last, like, 18, 24 months.
That's crazy, right?
Did you guys sit down and put together a strategy to grow that business?
Yeah, you know, me and Lambo just wanted to just be more creative with it, you know? And I think that, you know, we took something that was like kind of like not apparent and turned it into like a seven-figure business for us because we just start paying attention to it. You know what I'm saying? Like everybody, you know, you go, you know, you do the run of the mill. Everybody like, yeah, I'm gonna have t-shirts and stuff like that. But it's like, you know, we just wanted to like take it to another level, you know, create toys, create fucking skateboards, create fucking, you know, you name it, hats, jackets, you know what I mean? Like, I just had a fucking arcade game delivered in this motherfucker. I might sell those. So it's just like, you know, we stopped being lazy and got real innovative with that, you know, like we, you know, we were so laser focused on the music. We was just like, you know, man, like, you know, we built a fucking brand and we got to nurture every aspect of it, not just the musical side of it. So once we start nurturing the other aspects of the business, they started to grow.
Have you ever had a big idea but lacked the tools to implement it? Look no further than Shopify. Shopify is the brand that powers all your favorite clothing, beauty, and sneaker brands and offers the best-in-class commerce tools to allow you to sell online, in person, and on all major social platforms. Shopify fuels millions of entrepreneurs and turns ambition into action. Check out shopify.com/idea to learn more. Now back to the story. While Piñata and Bandana proved Gibbs could find success on his own terms, it was his Alchemist collaboration, Alfredo, that would earn him a nod from the Grammys. And now, with his bona fides confirmed, Gibbs is set to make his forthcoming album, SSS, his commercial zenith.
Were you surprised when you got the Grammy nom? So you, I don't imagine you had a Grammy campaign or anything like that.
No fucking way. I don't know shit about that. So like they, you know, when they nominated me, I was like, what the fuck? So, you know, now I just want to just throw that shit in everybody's face. Like, look, motherfucker, guess what? You know what I'm saying? So it's another notch under my belt, man. I think that, you know, it's a great thing. I can't say that I made music to get Grammy nominated. I never in my wildest dreams thought that I would get nominated for a fucking Grammy, dog. So that was amazing to me. Trophy or not, you know, the fact that they came down to the underground and saw what the fuck I was doing and recognized it, like, shit, I ain't mad at that. Now they gave me like a new sense of confidence. Now I know I got their fucking attention and I could do that shit every year. Cause I rap, I'm that good at rapping. I know I can get there every year.
One of the things, like the big changes that I think people lament a lot about the new way, you know, with streaming and the way music is that everything is here today and gone tomorrow.
It is.
It is, but I feel like what you've done with Bandana, what you did with Alfredo, you pushed the things for a year, you know, coming up on.
Exactly. I made it so you. Like, yeah, I'm still pushing fucking Alfredo. I haven't even really started the campaign on my next album yet. I'm just recording, you know, and I give a project legs for a long fucking time. And you can only do that if your shit is a fucking classic, you know? If you make some bullshit, of course it's going to be here today, gone tomorrow. If you make something that people are going to sit with for the rest of their life, then yeah, fuck it. I could work it. I mean, fuck, dog, honestly, I can make fucking Piñata merch today and sell it. I can make bandana. I can make a Piñata 10-year edition, whatever the fuck. I can make a bandana, whatever the fuck. I can reach back to all those projects and re-celebrate them forever.
So yeah, when you put out a record like Alfredo, do you have like a year-long marketing plan in mind?
Yeah, I mean, I got a lifelong marketing plan for all my projects. You know, like and when I make an album, I try to make it not just, you know, a fucking group of songs you're going to stream. You know what I mean? I want to make it a full experience. You know what I mean? I want you to love what I just, you know, put together, you know, like a movie, like a film, you know, like you don't, if you see a fucking Lethal Weapon t-shirt, you'll buy that. That's dope. Danny Glover, Mel Gibson, you know what I'm saying? Like they could probably sell merch from Lethal Weapon Part 1 through 4. Every year, you know what I'm saying? Or repackage it or make a VHS or a DVD or something, you know what I mean? But it's a classic. So the brand lives on, you know? Piñata lives on, Bandana lives on, like Alfredo lives on, you know, those three classic albums. So it's like, shit, I can do a goddamn Piñata tour right now and just do those songs and all my fans gonna show up. I could do a bandana tour right now and do all those songs. All my fans gonna show up. 10 years later, I could do, yo, I'm just only gonna perform Alfredo. All right, cool. They gonna show up. So it's just, you know, giving them something that they can attach themselves to, you know what I mean? They knew what they were doing at this moment when this came out and how they felt and the feeling. And people gonna really revert back to Alfredo because shit, they was fucking stuck in the house during the pandemic when I put the shit out. You know what I mean? So it was just like, fuck. So it really resonated with a lot of people, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it was one of those kind of albums, you know, and honestly, a lot of people didn't come out with good albums during this period, you know what I mean? So.
When you talk about making these classic albums, how much of it is a byproduct of rapping better than everybody else? And how much of it is the forethought that goes into kind of conceiving of it as an artistic project, both not only, you know, the art and the marketing and the whole package?
Right. The marketing, the whole package is everything, you know, the theme. This pretty much has to be a centralized theme. And I think that me and Lambo, we come up with that theme before we even start making the album. You know what I'm saying? Like, we knew Alfredo was going to be the theme before we even started. So we started thinking pasta, mafia, you know what I mean? Like, you know, shit like that. We started with that whole aesthetic, you know, like we see the album before we hear it, before we record it and hear it, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? We see the vision of what we're trying to do. And I think you kind of got to have that before you just go in with a full clip recording, you know what I mean? Because, you know, we kind of know what we're, you know, what we're going for. I knew the sound, you know, the sound I wanted from Alchemist. Choosing the beats is a skill as important as rapping. And, you know, I think when you know, guys like a guy that I look up to who really has a great ear for beats, Rick Ross, you know, like, you know, really not just the rapping side of that. I study his ear as well. So, you know, that, you know, combined with the overall factor of, like I said, seeing your album first is the key. You got to be able to see it. You know, I could see it. I could see the poster. I could see it on the shelf. I could see the t-shirts. I can see the concert, you know. Just like with this new project, Triple S, you know, I saw it. This is the message I want to bring across, you know, with this project. You know, I just want you to see three S's and be like, what the fuck is that? You know what I mean? So, you know, everything at the end of the day is marketing. That's a huge portion of, you know, making the music.
Was Piñata sort of the inflection point where you had that epiphany?
Definitely. I was like, okay, yeah, they fuck with this zebra shit. Let me run with this shit. You know what I'm saying? And I was just like, shit, I had like some zebra dice. You know what I'm saying? And I, you know, that kind of inspired that. And then I was like, chopping up this cocaine on like this like black table, or like one of them black tables. And then like I seen it was like, oh, this shit look kind of like zebra stripes, you know what I'm saying? So it's like I kind of like combined that whole marketing idea with that, you know.
And that changed how you thought about even your solo projects after that?
No, yeah, that changed everything, you know what I mean? Like,
that's where we get the Freddy album cover from.
Freddy concept, yeah, and then You Only Live Twice, and everything was, you know, I kind of saw, you know, where I wanted to go, where I was at, you know, every project. The You Only Live Twice shit, that was, you know, I was coming out of that situation. So that was kind of, you know, that's why that cover kind of looked like some religious type thing. The Freddy shit, I was just, you know, I was back to having fun again. And, you know, you could kind of tell like on that, you know, it's bright, it's pink. It's like I'm, you know, it's like that album is kind of like I got back to being comfortable again, rapping. So, you know, it was easy when I swung back around and had to make Bandana and then Alfredo. I was like really, like I said, I was comfortable again and more comfortable than I had ever been. And like I said, man, I was just on a path of destruction right now with this rap shit, man. I don't think anybody stand in front of me.
With SSS on the horizon, Gibbs is looking to broaden his brand beyond music. He's acting in films like Down with the King and shows like Bust Down, while dreaming up marketing ideas with Lambo and signing artists to his label.
Given the path of destruction, where does acting fit into your sort of endeavors?
Oh man, it's going to be a huge thing for me. I just shot my first lead role in Down with the King, and you know, it opened me up to knowing that I can really use my artistry from an acting standpoint as well. You know,
how do you see the connection between rapping and acting?
Really the whole performance aspect of it. You know, being able to deliver just vocally and emotionally. I think that me being a rapper and, you know, delivering, you know, those emotions in the booth kind of like helped me when it came to, you know, learning how to deliver my emotions in the film world. So, you know, shout out to the director, Diego Ungaro. He really like pushed me in this film and really like helped me to, you know, get real comfortable with being an actor. Now, you know, shit, I wouldn't mind doing that shit every day, you know? So it's a great thing, a great film that he, you know, asked me to be in. And I'm just thankful that he, you know, let me be a part of that, especially in the fucking lead role. He could have had me be a fucking taxi driver or some shit like that, you know what I mean? But, you know, he really let me, you know, be what I really, you know, all I could be in this film. He like really, you know, got everything out of me, shit that I didn't know that I had. So
have you watched the film yet?
Not at all. I don't even think I'm gonna be able to watch it. I don't like looking at myself on screen, if that makes any sense. I like to make the shit. I like to make it, make sure it's lit. Then it's like, I can't watch. Like videos, I can see if they okay one time, and I don't wanna like, I can't look at myself on the screen and shit. Like even when, like I was rapping on my last tour, and I was like, they had like the videos and shit behind me, I forgot. And then I like turned around, and I was like, oh, the fuck, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, I can't look at myself on screen, I get embarrassed and shit. Oh, that was weird.
So you're okay getting on stage in front of thousands of people,
yeah,
but looking at yourself,
I can't look like I could do like, if you ask me, have I ever like watched any of my performance tapes? Fuck no.
Okay.
I can't look at it. It's like, ooh, for real? Yeah. I mean, and I could be doing fucking great. You know what I mean? Like, shit, a lot of videos I shoot, they great. I don't know. I just don't look at myself on camera. You know what I mean? Like that. I just do it and I just keep it moving.
You know? So what was the part of acting that gave you kind of the satisfaction and the joy?
I'm so into films and into, you know, things of that nature. So just to be a part of one, you know, finally was, you know, it was a blessing, man. So, you know, it was definitely tough waking up every day and filming in the fucking Berkshires in upstate New York. That was a fucking weird experience, being on a fucking farm every day. But, you know, I wouldn't trade a minute of that for nothing, you know?
Do you see people following the moves that you've made and the sort of ground that you've broken?
Definitely, definitely. You know, it's a lot of people that got rich off of, you know, the shit that I've the groundwork that I laid. And I'm proud of them for that. And yeah, but I definitely see the influence. I definitely see, you know, guys really locked in the lyrics and being, you know, more lyricists starting to come out of the gate, you know. You know, but they could be as lyrical as all the fuck they want, and rap is great as the fuck they think, you know what I mean? They still, you know, won't be able to match my versatility, you know? So that's all well and good. I'm glad that motherfuckers is rapping now and they feel like they can rap. That's great.
So when you look at the next few years of your life and your career, what are the challenges and the goals that you have for yourself?
Making a lot of money, man. I mean, not making a lot of money, just making a lot of moves, man. Being productive and just being able to be here for my kids, really, to be honest, man. Being so productive that I got a lot of time to be with my kids, you know. So long as I can, like, you know, make things that's going to, like, set me straight, that's all that really matters to me. The film thing is something that I got to work on, work harder at, get more roles, get in with the acting coach more, so I can, you know, maybe be one of the best at that one day, you know. I can do it. It's definitely possible. So, but I got to go through the ranks. I'm not, you know, an accomplished actor yet. So, and I want to respect the game and learn from other guys, you know, that's accomplished, and so that I can, you know, move up the ranks a little bit.
You've done a lot of really sort of, I guess, cutting edge marketing moves over the last few years. One of them that jumped out is the, you know, the burger with the toy and the
rabbit.
Yeah, the rabbit. Like, where did these ideas come from?
Me and Lambo, honestly, man. You know, we talk every morning, like clockwork, every morning, 7, 8, once we put our kids to sleep or put them to, take them to school, like, we're on the phone brainstorming. And that's been the grand nature of our relationship, you know, the past, you know, 15 years, man, is that we, you know, shit, we like 90s kids at heart, you know, we love, we got so much in common, but we so different, you know, and we just enjoy so much shit that we both grew up on. And, you know, from shit, from goddamn Scarface to fucking Sonic the Hedgehog to Super Mario Kart. Like, we just, you know, we kids at heart, man. So it's like we just love just bringing new ideas to each other every day. You know, it's like I can't wake up to, like, share something with him. He can't wake up to share something with me. And that relationship is, you know, that's priceless, man. So when you got two guys like that, that's, you know, so media intensive and so creative, you know, like, we make shit every day. You know, he might think of a new, Lambo think of ideas for shit that I don't even think of, you know what I'm saying? And it's, by the time I see it, it's already in production. So it's just like, you know, and vice versa. So it's just like, you know, we want to market gangster rap in a different kind of way. You know what I mean? Like, I'm rapping about the same kind of shit that everybody else is, you know? It's just in a different kind of fucking package, you know?
Given all of the sort of energy that you put into innovating these ideas and creating these paradigms, do you ever think about trying to apply that to other artists?
Yeah, definitely. Me and Lambo just started our new company, Cane Train Records. So, you know, we gonna, and, you know, and we really want to, you know, from a creative standpoint, just, you know, bring new ideas to the table. We're not about being, like, you know, the run-of-the-mill kind of, like, rap label shit, that kind of, like, dusty-ass shit that everybody do. They just sign, like, 10 rappers and have, like, a rap click and all that shit. Like, nah, we kind of, we more like a creative-based company than some, like, bullshit-ass rap click. So I ain't never really got into that type of shit. So when we do that shit with other artists, you're going to see it and you're going to really see our fingerprint on it, and it's going to be amazing, you know?
What are you doing on this record, you know, in terms of production or in terms of vision that you feel like separates it from the stuff you've done independently or the stuff you've done collaboratively?
I'm definitely working with a lot bigger producers, for sure. Shit, just left fucking for real.
Doesn't get much bigger than that.
Doesn't get much bigger than that, man. You know what I mean? That's astronomical. I was just with P. Diddy the other day. You know what I mean? Like,
I've heard of him.
Getting a lot of game from him. You know, this game is, I mean, this album is just definitely a little bit more bossed up, for sure. But like I said, man, I'm not going to divert from anything that I've been doing. You know what I mean? I'm going to deliver the same, you know, solid material that I've been doing, you know, the past shit, 5-6 albums. So it's just, you know, as long as I keep that mentality, no matter who I'm working with, it's going to be great. You know what I mean? And just, you know, putting those names in the mix only makes it even, you know, greater. I mean, shit, dog, I just did a song with Sway Lee. You know what I mean? That's fucking crazy. Like, people would never picture some of the combinations that I'm going to come with on this album, but they're going to appreciate them. They're going to be like, oh, okay, yeah, I didn't know I needed that, you know, so.
Is there anything that you look back at your career that you would do differently?
No, not at all. Everything happened in the way it was supposed to happen. So, no, not at all. I'm supposed to be at the top of my game right now, you know, not 10 years ago, not 5 years ago. You know, everything that I ever wanted, I'm supposed to get it now. So maybe I wasn't supposed to get it 10 years ago. So, you know, God willing, that you know, it'll get even greater as I go along. So I think it's I'm glad to be, you know, getting my accolades and things. You know, I don't want to say late in my career because shit, I feel like I'm just getting started. You know, I've just been fortunate enough to have a longer one than most of these motherfuckers.
Do you still get the same sense of accomplishment and fulfillment from it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Especially when I perform. You know, that's the ultimate fulfillment. You know what I mean? See a bunch of people that got off work, when they got an outfit, paid their hard-earned money. You know what I'm saying? Probably went and got a fucking babysitter for their kids to come see you. That's why you do it. You know, the respect. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, that's the ultimate fulfillment. You know what I mean? You bring in, you know, you work so hard to bring, you know, a moment or a piece of joy to somebody else that's working hard. And that's it right there. You know, that's why you do this shit, you know?
So you're midway through recording your 10th or so album, but also your major label debut.
That's crazy to even think about. I'm like, damn, for real? Wow.
How do you approach that? Or is this in any way different than...
Since this is my major label debut, can I get Grammy nominated for Best New Artist?
Actually, that's probably... You probably could,
yeah. Shit'd be crazy as fuck. I don't give a fuck about album of the year, song of the year, none of that. I want to get nominated for Best New Artist. That shit'd be crazy as fuck. That'd be wild. That's my goal. That's my goal for the okay. Best New Artist Grammy.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Idea Generation, featuring Freddie Gibbs. Whether it's the power of perseverance or the ubiquity of marketing, we hope this episode left you with some things to think about. Thanks to our partners at Shopify for making this happen. Check out their services at shopify.com/ideas right now.
What is success?
Success is, to me, is just being happy. You can't really put a dollar amount on it or, you know, anything of that nature. I just think that you just, when you get to the point where you're, like, content with where you're at, you know.